This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
וידבר השם אל משה בעצם היום הזה לימוד. And Hashem spoke to Moshe in the fullness of this day, saying, עלי אל הר העבורים הזה הר נבוי, אשר בארץ מויב, go up on this mountain of הר נבוי, which is in the land of Moab, אשר על פני יריחו, וראי את ארץ כנען, and see the land of כנען, etc., ומוס בהר אשר עתו אלה שמה, והיוסף אל הנכו, and die there on the mountain onto which you're going and gather unto your people there. We discussed last week how, despite the ability of the human being, if he reaches the right stature to conquer nature and to manipulate nature, the one aspect of nature that man has not been able to conquer is death. And where Moshe pleaded to the Ribbono Shel Olam and said, what am I dying for? Is there anything I've done wrong that is deserving of death? The Ribbono Shel Olam answered him and said, no, that you're dying because of the sin of Odom Harishon. It goes back to the first man. There's nothing I can do about this. Every human being eventually dies. The Rashi on this pasuk that I've just read to you indicates that Moshe came very close to being saved from death. And in fact, it was only by great miracle that the Ribbono Shel Olam, so to say, succeeded in bringing about Moshe's death. It wasn't natural. Naturally, Moshe should not have died. Rashi says, "Bishloisha mekumos ne'amar be'etzem hayom hazeh." On three occasions, the word "be'etzem hayom hazeh" is used. The phrase "be'etzem hayom hazeh," in the midst of this very day. Ne'amar b'Noach be'etzem hayom hazeh bo Noach. In the case of Noach, it says in the midst of this very day, Noach came into the ark. The maris oiro shel yom, at the strongest light of day. The fisha hayu b'nei doiro imrim, because the people of the generation used to say, bekach bekach, we swear, im anu margishim bo, if we are aware of it, ein anu menichim oisilikones b'teva, we will not allow Noach to go into the ark. V'lo'ed, not only that, elo anu noikrim kshirim b'kardomis, we're going to take choppers and axes, u'mevachin es ha'teva, we're going to smash that teva, which is that ark. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, hareini machnisei, I will bring him into the ark, not in the middle of the night when you're not looking, b'chatzi hayom, in the middle of the day. B'chol mi sheyesh b'yodo k'ach limchos, yodo yimchos. And anybody who wants to stop me, let him come and try. That's the first case of be'etzem hayom hazeh. The second case, b'mitzrayim ne'emar be'etzem hayom hazeh v'tzi hashem. Egypt also, it says, in that very day, in the midst of that very day, the Ribbono Shel Olam took the Bnei Yisrael out of Egypt. The fish are you Mitzrayim Oimrim, because Mitzrayim were saying, Mitzrayim were saying, Bekach bekach we sway him, Anu margishim bohem, if we feel them going out, Ein anu menichim oisom lot says, we will not allow them to go. The Lord, and not only that, Elo anu noitrim sayofis ukle zayim, we will take swords and weapons, Bethurgin bohem, and we will kill any of them who try to get out. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm not going to take them out in the middle of the night when you're not looking. Hareini motzion b'chatzi hayom, I'm going to take them out in the middle of the day. And anybody who wants to try and stop me, let him try and stop me. Afkan b'mitosoi shal Moshe. Likewise, the third case is here with the death of Moshe. Ne'emar, it says, be'etzem hayom hazeh, on that very day, the fish of you Yisrael Oimrim, because Yisrael was saying, Bekach Bekach, Imanu Margishim Boy, we swear that if we sense that he's going to leave us, Ein Anu Menichin Oisa, we will not allow it. Adom She Tzionu Min Yitzrayim, a man who took us out of Egypt, Bekor Olonu Es Hayom, and he split for us the sea, Behirid lonu is Hamon, and he brought down Mon for us. Behigiz lonu is Haslov, and he brought the Slov for us to eat. Behelo lonu is Habeir, and he brought us the well for us to drink from. Venosam lonu is Atiro, and he gave us the Tiro. Ein anu menichin oisoi, we will not allow him to die. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the Ribbono shel Olam, I'm not going to take him in the middle of the night when you're not looking. Hareini machnisoi bechatzi hayoim, I'm going to take him in the middle of the day and see if you can stop me. That's a very strange Rashi, because the implication is that just as humanity was going to use all its efforts to prevent Noah's entrance into the table, and it needed God's miraculous intervention to get him in, and just as Egyptian humanity, Egyptian society, was going to use all the efforts, all the means within its power to prevent Am Yisrael from escaping from Egypt, and the Ribbono shel Olam was miraculously going to get them out, so Am Yisrael was going to use all its power to prevent Moshe Rabbeinu from dying, and the implication is the Ribbono shel Olam would have to use miraculous intervention to actually pull Moshe away from them and get him to die. So we see that although last week we said that death is one thing which humanity has not been able to overcome, there is one case where humanity nearly overcame death, not their own death, but the death of Moshe, and were it not for God's miraculous intervention, Moshe would not have died because of the efforts of Am Yisrael. That it is possible, theoretically at least, to overcome even death. So powerful is the human being. And what I want to discuss with you this evening is how. How does the human being develop that power? What is the basis of it? What is our understanding of it? That can dominate nature to such an extent that in theory at least, it is possible even to dominate death. Earlier in the Sedra, the Ribbono shel Olam is criticizing Am Yisrael, and it says, Yizbechu lashedim loy Eloha. They serve, they sacrifice to spirits that have no power. That's the normal translation of the phrase, loy Eloha. But Unkel has translated a little bit differently, and he says, "Dabochu l'sheilin v'lesbohen tzoroch." They sacrifice to spirits which have no need, not no power, but no need. Says the Sifri, "Ilu ayu ivdin lachamo v'alvono lakrichovim l'mazolus." If they would serve the sun and the moon, the stars and the constellations, or other things which are a need of the world and give benefit to the world, my anger would not be so intense. But they land up serving something which does them no good, it does them harm, if anything. There the anger is intense. What is the Sifri telling us? That there would be a little less anger. Angry the Ribbono shel Olam would be. That if we served idolatry and we chose idols from whom the world has some benefit, the Ribbono shel Olam would be a little bit less angry. You see from here that the foundation of religious practice, not Torah, it makes no difference what religion. The foundation of any religious practice has to be hakoros hatov. It has to be a response to an acknowledgement of indebtedness. If a religion is based, even if it's an idolatrous religion, if it's based on a response to the acknowledgement of indebtedness, it's 1 degree better than idolatry, any other form of idolatry. At least this, it's not right, it's not true, it's not correct, and the Ribbono shel Olam would be angry. But there's something right about it. Where the religion is not based on an indebtedness, on an acknowledgement of indebtedness, there is nothing right about it at all, and the Ribbono shel Olam's anger is extreme. this being the foundation of all religion, but particularly of Yiddishkeit, is a very important concept which we developed this morning in the ladies' shiur and on which we will build this evening. The Derech Hashem, which was written by the author of the Mesillas Yesharim, starts off his sefer saying that the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world because he wanted to do good. Part of being good is doing good, and the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to do good. To do good, you need somebody to receive the goodness. You've got to have somebody to be good to. So he created man. But to do good to somebody is not yet totally good. When does it become totally good? Is if you can make him master of his own good. You don't want him to be permanently indebted to you. So the ultimate of goodness is to give goodness in a way which allows the other person to master that goodness, to become the balabos of that goodness. He must be kene hatoyv, says the Derech Hashem. He must have acquired the goodness himself. It must belong to him. It's not good enough just to have the goodness, otherwise it's not total goodness. How does one achieve that? If that's the bottom line of the creation, then that's the bottom line of our avodas Hashem. So we're here to earn our goodness. To earn the Tova that eventually wants to give us goodness, but he wants it to be total goodness, which means we must earn it. So we're here to earn good. That's what we're here for. That's really nice, but how do we do it? The Chovas HaVovas makes a calculation that after a few days of being alive already, there's no way we can repay. One can we repay the devotion for one day of life? What can be achieved in one day? Is it possible to pay the Ribbono Shel Olam for the gift of one day of life, and 2 days of life, and 5 days of life, and 10 days of life, with everything that goes with it and all the comforts he's given us as well? Is it possible to begin to repay the Ribbono Shel Olam? So what's this game that we're playing? We're here to earn our own good, and the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us so much good we cannot possibly earn it. We can't possibly pay for it. We're bankrupt before we start. What's the big deal? Leave us where we were. That we need to understand. The Medrash comments on the shape of the windows in the Beis Hamikdash which Shlomo built. Amar Rabbi Ovin Alevi, Ak motzei mi shebikesh la'asos lo yichalenus. You find that if one's building a house and one wants to build windows, oise oisom rechovois mibifnim vetzorois mibachutz. Then you make the windows exactly the same as Mr. Pagoda made these windows. You see, very wide windows on the inside, and you look out there, very narrow. On the outside they must be narrow, and on the inside they must be wide. Why? Because so that the light gets diffused. Because to have them wide on the outside as well, then people can throw things into the window. In those days they didn't used to cover the windows with glass, the windows used to be open. So on the outside they had to be narrow in order that they couldn't, from outside, that they couldn't destroy the inside. But then there was a slant and the windows had to widen as they came in through the wall so that the light could be diffused over a wider area. But the windows of the Beis HaMikdash, they were wide on the outside and narrow on the inside. Exactly the opposite of the normal way of building. Lama, why? Sheyiye ha'oyr yotze b'beis hamikdash u'meir lo yilam. So that the light would go out from the Beis HaMikdash and light up the world. Normally you have windows because you want light to come from the outside to the inside. But in the case of the Beis HaMikdash, that wasn't necessary. We needed the light from the inside to go out. So the direction of the windows was the opposite. The windows were narrow on the inside and they were wide on the outside. And that's very strange. How much light was there inside the Beis HaMikdash after all? In the middle of there anyway. 7 little candles. How far is that light going to go in the big dark world outside? What does it all mean? The Medrash says in Baal Yisrael, Omru Yisrael, Bifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yisrael said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ribbono Shel Olam, Lonu ata ume shenoyer lefanecha? Are you telling us to light a menorah before you? Atohu oyro Yisrael Olam, you are the light of the world. The sun was only created, the sun and the moon and the stars were only created on the third day, if I remember correctly. What happened on the first and second day? It says, and there was morning, and there was evening, and there was one day, and there was morning, and where did the light come from? And from the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the source of light. Ba'oiro doro etzlecho, light lives by you. You are light. And you're telling us to light the candles? What do you need us to light for you for? Amalu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, answer the Ribbono Shel Olam. Lo shani tzorich lochem, I don't need you. But I would like you to light up for me the way I lit for you. Why? So as to elevate you in the eyes of the nations. So that they should say, look how the Jewish people provide light for he who lights up the whole world. Strange midrash. What can this be compared to? The pikeach besuma, a man who can see in a blind man. Show you mahalchim bederech, we're walking along the road. Omer le pikeach besuma, and the blind, the man who can see is obviously leading the blind man along the road. Omer le pikeach besuma, kishutikanes l'toch habayis. When we get into the house, say v'ad lekli es haneir hazeh. Here's a torch. When we get into the house and it's dark outside, I can lead you around because it's light. But when we get into the house, it's dark, I can't see. Here's the torch. When we get inside, turn the torch on so that I can see where I'm going, says the man who can't see. Hamalei Asuma, so Asuma says, but they both call, I know. Shayisi b'derech atayis m'samcheni. All the way on the road, you led me, I couldn't see anything. Actually, nichnasu l'teich habayis atayis m'lavayis. Until we came to the house, you led me. V'ashav atorim eradlikli yifaneir azeh v'ha'ili. And now you're telling me to put on the light for you, but you need me to put on the light for you. As from now, not only could you see for yourself, but you saw for me as well. And now you want me to turn on the torch? I don't understand what you're after. So that you shouldn't feel indebted to me, so that because I have led you along the road, therefore I gave you the torch and I said, you light it for me. Here we see a very important decision. The menorah comes to teach the nature, the style of our whole avodas Hashem, of our whole service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Does God need us? Does God need our mitzvahs? He needs it the same as the blind man needs the light inside. The same as the man who can see needs the light inside. I don't need the light, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm the source of light. I can make as much light as I need. But I'm giving you the opportunity to provide me with light. You light the menorah because all these years I've provided you with light. I've led you through the dark turmoil of the world. I led you from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael with light. In Eretz Yisrael I've led you. I've given you the light of Torah. You've got it all the time. I've lit up the world for you. Pay me back. You light up for me so that you won't feel indebted to me. It's a strange medrash. What's we going to light the menorah and that's going to relieve our debts to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Be that as it may, one thing we see here again is the same concept that we had a moment ago, that the underlying principle of Avodas Hashem is the acknowledgement of a debt of gratitude. Without that, the Avodas Hashem doesn't stop. That's the first principle we see tonight, not only of Yiddishkeit, but of every religion. And in Torah, it's of primary importance. That's what I want the Beis HaMikdash to teach. That's why I want the windows outwards. Let them see the light. The purpose of the menorah is that the world should see how you provide light in the Beis HaMikdash. They expected light to come magically. Let's fool them. We're not going to give them what they expected. You're going to provide the light and let them all see that although they know I could provide the light miraculously, I've chosen not to. I've chosen to ask you to provide the light. Let them see your natural light in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what we need. So the windows are shaped in such a way that that can be seen from the outside. The whole of life of man is a system of creating indebtedness and of fulfilling indebtedness. Not just in the relationship between the Ribono Shel Olam and us, but in every relationship. And it's in that area that the human being has his free choice. An inanimate object doesn't respond. You can feed it and it doesn't get fatter. You can neglect it and it doesn't get thinner. You remember when they started marketing pet rocks? That was the vault of a pet rock. You don't have to feed it, you don't nothing, you just leave it and it flourishes. It just does very well without you. But people didn't like pet rocks for long. They liked, they preferred real pets. Wow. It's much more trouble to look after a pet than it is to look after a pet rock. But that's what they want. They wanted to see the response. They enjoyed seeing the loyalty develop in a dog in response to the feeding of the dog and the caring for the dog. They enjoyed seeing the love developing in a cat in return for the saucer of milk that one gives her every morning. That's what they wanted to see. An animal, by its nature, by its instinct, responds. It's responsive. The human being has two parts to him. He has an animal part to him which by nature is responsive. If he's fed, he gets fatter. If he isn't fed, he gets thinner. It's his body. But his human side, that's his own decision whether he wants to be responsive or he doesn't want to be responsive. The degree to which a human being wants to be inanimate or animate is his own choice. And so you have human beings who are responsive and you have human beings who are not responsive. Sometimes you talk to a person and his face lights up, and sometimes you talk to a person and you could be talking to a wall and there's absolutely no difference. There are human beings who are alive and there are human beings who are dead. But every action of the human being has within it the possibility of the creation of a debt or the fulfillment of a debt. If one's walking down the road carrying a heavy load and another person comes up to you and says, "Can I help you?" You've got to know that by saying yes, you're creating an indebtedness. The person is helping you. You owe the person. You've either got to pay him for his efforts, or there'll come a time where some way or other you're going to have to pay him. There's nothing for nothing. The fact that he's done something for you automatically creates within you an indebtedness. That has to be understood. Likewise, if you help another person, you've got to know that you've automatically created an indebtedness in them. Whether you like it or not, that's how the world operates. If you come and take 100 rand from me, you're indebted. You've got to return the 100 rand. One day, sooner or later, it has to be returned. The only time that there isn't indebtedness is when one receives charity. It's the only time, and that's the most humiliating of all things. When I say, "Here's 100 rand, you don't have to pay me back." That's the most humiliating of all. Do you know in Japan how to humiliate a person? You give him a tip. The most humiliating, the most insulting thing you can do. The taxi driver says the fare is $5, and you give him $5.50. He looks at the 50 cents and he looks at you in absolute disgust and he throws it at you. Kind of insulting. Not because it's too little. If you gave him $100, he'd do the same. You give him charity. You can't need your 50 cents. I'm a professional. I've given you a ride. It's cost $5 and you pay me for it. If he feels exactly the way as your doctor would feel, imagine you can see the doctor and afterwards you can say to the receptionist, "How much do I owe him?" And he says, "Nine." She says, "19 rand 90. And you say, "Yeah, I get 21 rand, give him the rand, give it to him." This is going to be insulting. So the taxi driver in Japan says, "It's exactly the same. I'm a professional and I levy a fee according to what my service is worth. What do you think, I need your charity?" Whether he's poor or he's rich, it makes no difference. And the same applies to the porter. It makes no difference who it is. He's paid a salary for carrying your suitcases. What are you giving him extra things for? You think he needs your charity? He doesn't want to become indebted to you. He understands that nothing is for nothing, and if you're giving him more than his services are worth, because he's being paid what his services are worth. If you're giving him more than his services are worth, he knows one day you're going to come and ask, you're going to extract it one day. He would rather remain independent of you, thank you very much. And in China, where they're a little bit more mercenary and they're willing to take the tip again. But the gratitude they show for the tip, that's how they pay the debt. They don't want to remain indebted. I always give the example once. The first time that I took my wife to that part of the world, and she was in the bathroom when the waiter brought some cold drinks or something, and all she heard was the knock on the door and the waiter coming in, "Good morning, sir." And then she just said, "Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Thank you again. I cannot thank you enough." And she came out and said, "What did you do to the man? What happened to him?" "I gave him 10% more than the bill said. That's all I did." And that's how they operate. He doesn't want to remain in debt. So by overdoing the thank you, at least that way, he's given you enough pleasure now for your 50 cents that he owes you nothing more than that. He said, "Thank you enough." He's humiliated himself, humbled himself. A Chinaman is prepared to do that for the 50 cents. The Japanese won't do it for the 50 cents. He's prepared to do it for the 50 cents, but once he's done that, then he's paid his debt. Every action has a price. There's nothing that we do which is neither the creation of a debt or the payment of a debt. If we take something from the world, we have to put it back into the world. If we take it without putting it back into the world, that's called theft. It means we've taken more than we're entitled to. How does a person earn a living? If everything is either the creation of a debt or the payment of a debt, then we should always, our books should always balance out, should always be zero. That's the miracle of earning a living. That you can buy something, you can buy merchandise for 100 rand, and by using your own wisdom, your own productivity, your own talents, your own work, you can add value to that 100 rand. And you can sell it for 120. That is what business is. That is what productive business is. Inflationary business is when you buy something for 100 rand and you add nothing to it, and you sell it for 120 rand. That's when you create inflation. That's called theft. That's called taking from the world more than I put into the world. So what has to happen in order to solve that problem? If everybody's taking 20% more than they're putting in, then the country is short of 20% of the money. So the government prints a little bit more. What does that mean in fact? The government takes away from everybody the 20% which they stole, and devalues the money, so then you're left still with your old 100. That's all it means. I try to cheat. I try to take more. I ask for an increase of 20% when I'm not going to work harder. I'm going to do the same job as I did last year, but I want 20% more. So all the government says is good. Get your 20% more, we'll print more money, which means your 20% more is now worth what your old salary was. That's all. And if the government's really clever, they say, we're going to do the same. And we also want more than we're worth. So your 120 rand will be worth 90 rand. That's the way they really do it. And then the economy goes backwards, and they're entitled to do it. That's what we're all doing. Until a human being understands, nothing's for nothing. If I've got to earn, if I want more, I've got to put in more. Then the whole relationship changes. It says the Ribono Shel Olam, I don't want to give you anything for nothing. All the goodness I'm going to pour onto you, I want you to be able to earn that goodness. I want you to feel master of that goodness. Not that you've been given it as a handout, and not that you still have to repay it. You have to repay it. There's no point in lending a person money which he can never repay, and putting him into a state of indebtedness which creates a pressure for him. Creates such a pressure for him that he can never come out of it straight. What has one done for him? You've created a slave, you haven't created a master. We mentioned in the ladies' show this morning, that's how the mafia work. People are always very intrigued by the fact that the mafia is built on chesed. They're sweet old people, they're kind to one another, they live nice family lives, nice old grandpas all of them. And yet they're so vicious. How do you put the two together? It's very simple. They work on the basis of the creation of death. That's all. Make a man indebted to you to an extent more than he's able to pay, and he's your servant for life. That's how they work. They operate. Their villainy is based on chesed. When you have got chesed without mishpat, when you've got kindness without justice, then you've got villainy. Kindness without justice means you create a servant. Justice is the repayment of a debt. Kindness is the creation of a debt. When you lend money, that's gminus chasodit. Lending money is kindness. Providing for another person is kindness. Paying for what you've borrowed, that's mishpat, that's justice. And there can only be a fair relationship between people where people are lending to one another and paying back what they've borrowed. And where the lender makes sure that the borrower is able to pay back and the borrower makes sure that he is able to pay back, then you can have a society which is operating with chesed and mishpat in a balanced way. So the Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't want to do chesed to you in a way where you can never pay me back. So we're going to work, I'm going to do the chesed, but you're going to have to pay back. And the currency is the mitzvahs. I'm going to give you the Torah to show you how to repay your debts. That way you won't feel indebted. How far does the indebtedness go? There's a beautiful medrash which we spoke about many years ago when we had a shiur on interpersonal hakkodes hatov, where the daughters of Yisro come and they tell Yisro. Yisro says, why were you so quick today feeding the flock? And they say, Ish Mitzri Yitzilonu, an Egyptian man saved us. Asks the Medrash, V'chi Mitzri Hoyo Moshe? Are they referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, an Egyptian man? Is that what the Torah calls him? Answers the Medrash, Moshe, this can be compared to a case, L'echot Shenoshcho Ha'oroid, a man who was bitten by a scorpion. V'hoyo Rots Litein Raglov B'mayim, so he ran to put his feet in the water to wash out the poison. Nasan al-Lanar, he put his feet into the river, and as he was putting his feet into the river, Ro'atinuk Echad Shushokab Amayim, he saw a little child sinking, drowning. Basholach Yodah, and he stretched out his hand to Hitzilu, and he pulled the baby out of the water. Amalei Atzilek, so the child says to the man, Ilulei Atzok Bar Yisimet, were it not for you, I would be dead. I'm in debt. My life is indebted to you. Amalei Lo'ani Hitzaltifo, said the man, I didn't save you. Anybody in my position would have saved you. Who made sure that I should be here when you were drowning? That scorpion that bit me, he is the one who saved me. So said the daughters of Yisrael to Moshe, when he saved them from the shepherd, they turned around to him and they said, Rishakach Rav Moshe, thank you for saving us. I did what any moral person would have done standing here. The miracle was that I was here when you needed me. And that was because of the Egyptian that I killed and I had to flee from Moshe, from Pharaoh. And kach omru la'avim ish mitzri. And that's why when they came home, they said to the father, you know what? An Egyptian, thousands of miles away, saved us. Kloma mi golam l'zeh sh'yove etzleinu ish mitzri shahorai. Who was the cause of Moshe Rabbeinu coming and saving us? It was an Egyptian who we killed a long time ago. Chaim Shmulevitz used to bring this medrash to show how far back the obligation of Hakoros HaTov goes. Hakoros HaTov, an debt of gratitude, is not only to the person from whom you received the goodness, but you've got to follow it all the way back and find who was the source of that goodness, who caused you right at the very beginning, who was the original motivator of the cause and effect of this chain of events that occurred thereafter, which culminated in the benefit that you had. That's the chiyuv of Hakoros HaTov. And that's a terribly important yesod in Hakoros HaTov. Otherwise, if it were not for that yesod, if it were not for that principle, then an employee, who should he be grateful to for his job and for his income? His balabos, he's the man who pays him. But if you follow the system of the orid, if you follow the system of the scorpion, who do you have to be in gratitude to? The Ribbono Shel Olam. And so with all the goodness we get, if you will say that Hakoros HaTov is showing gratitude to he who did good to you, then you can cut the Ribbono Shel Olam right out of the picture. Because never does the Ribbono Shel Olam do good directly. It's always through channels. And the fact that Hakoros HaTov, that in acknowledgement of gratitude and acknowledgement of indebtedness, is the foundation stone of Yiddishkeit, means that acknowledgement of indebtedness requires the human being to follow back the cause of his goodness all the way, and to get to the source of the chain of events which culminated in his goodness. And if one will do that, at the back of it all, at the end of it all, is the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. And there's where the gratitude has to be. And that's the way the Sefer of the Chovos HaAvodos is structured. In the beginning he starts with Shaar HaBechina, an analysis of the goodness of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then comes Shaar HaAvodos HaElokim. As once you've acknowledged, once you've perceived the goodness through nature and through science, and through economics, you've understood how the Ribbono Shel Olam operates. Then comes Avodas Hashem. Then you can serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. And in his psiche, in his opening of that perek, of the Shaar Avodas Hashem, and in the third perek there, he makes it very clear that Avodas Hashem is based on the obligation of an individual to show gratitude to he from whom he has benefited. And here we have the principle of the Oroi, that you have to trace it right back to the original benefactor, not to the last benefactor. That being the case, you now understand that the prime motivation of our Avodas Hashem is the acknowledgement of the debt of gratitude, and without that there can't be any service of the Ribono Shel Olam. And we can understand that this acknowledgement of gratitude is not an action, it's a midah, it's a type of human being. There are people who are receive something for nothing. They feel like, firstly, there are people like the Japanese, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyin, who would not take a gift from anybody. So much so that when he died, and he didn't leave enough money in his estate to build a tombstone for him, every time they put up a tombstone on his grave, the tombstone fell down. It never withstood, because throughout his life he took nothing for nothing, and he wasn't prepared to take a tombstone for nothing either. And to this day, the pile of stones, of broken tombstones, can be seen in Tzfat, where they've never been able to establish a tombstone on his grave. He will not take anything for nothing, not even a tombstone. So on the one hand, Lahavdil, we've got the type of mentality similar to the Japanese. And you have another, like the Chinese. We're not on that level. We have to take. But we need to repay. It's a feeling of an urgency to repay. I can't remain owing. I must get it. I must repay. That's another kind of human being. And then you've got the third kind of human being, the one who wants the free ride. You can give him and give him and give him, and he never feels the urgency to repay. As long as he's receiving, he's happy. He's quite happy. He doesn't notice a thing. You can invite him to your home for dinner, and he sits and he eats your dinner, and off he goes. Doesn't feel any. Maybe he'll say shukat. Maybe he'll say thank you. You can invite him a second time, he'll do the same. He'll eat your dinner a second time, and off he goes. If it's your duty to provide him with dinner, nothing at all, you'll find another human being who will not accept an invitation. It's another extreme. Can't, don't deserve it. It's another extreme. We're not on that level. And you'll find the middle human being. Thank you very much, and he'll come. A vase of flowers, a box of chocolates, a bottle of wine. Come in some way, show that he feels embarrassed about what he's receiving, that he feels uncomfortable that he's taking without giving. So at least he'll demonstrate that discomfort, and in the process of demonstrating that discomfort, at least shows his underlying morality. I don't want any free rides. I can't give you the value of your entire meal. You stood in the kitchen the whole day and you toiled for me and you worked for me. I can't repay you for that. But at least to show you that I don't enjoy receiving things for nothing, please accept this from me or that from me. Or he'll just write a nice note afterwards. He'll write a letter thanking you, showing you that he's noticed it, that he's felt appreciation. And the other one, in, out, makes no difference at all. Different types of people, not different actions. Different kinds of human beings. And I'm indebted to Rabbi Goldfein for showing me a most unbelievable Maharal on a Gemara in Nida, on that Lamed on the base. where the Gemara says, Dorash Rabbi Simloi learnt, Lema havlad doime bimei imoi. What does a fetus in its mother's womb look like? And he goes into a long description of what it looks like. We're only interested in the first phrase. Lepinkas shemekupal umuna. It looks like a folded up notebook, says Rabbi Simloi. All folded up, when it comes out, it opens up. While it's in the womb, it's all closed up, it's folded up. The man asks, what's Rabbi Simloi teaching us? It's a letter in obstetrics and gynecology. What's it all about? Why do we need to know what the baby looks like, and why doesn't he just say it's folded up? And he tells afterwards, he describes exactly how it's folded. What's the meaning of like a pink cat, like a notebook? He says, the man, a notebook is not just an ordinary notebook. When we use the word pink cat, that means a ledger book. That's the notebook where you keep a list of your debts. I owe so-and-so X amount, so-and-so owes me Y amount. That's a pinkas. Says Rabbi Simloi, from the way the baby is placed into the mother's womb, one can learn the whole meaning of life. And he goes on to develop, out of Rabbi Simloi's drosha, a whole drosha, the Maharal develops, explaining the meaning of life based on the way the child sits in the mother's womb. And in this area, he says the whole of life is keeping a pinkus. Everything you do, the same yesod we're talking about now, everything you do is the creation of an obligation or the fulfillment of an obligation. And you're constantly keeping a note. But the most important point of the Maharal is not just a comparison, not just that it's like you're constantly keeping a note. The important thing is that the baby is the notebook. You are the notebook. Not a separate notebook. On you it's written how much you owe and how much you are owed. This difference in people, one doesn't just notice in their behavior that there are people who behave in a way that demonstrates a desire to fulfill obligations, where there's other people who behave in a way which demonstrates a desire to create obligations. You can see it on the face. You have certain people who are very good in business, they're good with figures. And they can look at a balance sheet, no matter how the balance sheet is being dressed up, they can look through it, and they can say this business is sick. And they can look at another balance sheet which a layman would look at and think it looks very nice or it looks very poor, and they can say, oh, this is a healthy, growing business. You have people who can walk into a business, take a look around, and smell the air. Say, this is a thriving business. Walk into another business, it can be a big empire. And they can say, this is on its last leg, this is not going to work. What is it that they're sniffing? What is it that they smell? Bankruptcy is something so deep and so rotten that one can smell it deep down. Bankruptcy is the person or the company that thrives on creating obligations which it cannot fulfill. It thrives on basic immorality. And carries on and on and on until it's finally pulled down, and with it are pulled down countless other people. And a sensitive person can come in and he can smell by the attitude of the people, by the way the work is done. It's a whole model, it's a midah. It's not just a state of business, it's a state of living, it's a type of human being. And you can spot him immediately. There's the human being who creates obligations, and there's the human being who fulfills obligations. And there's the human being who's constantly creating obligations in others. That's a healthy business. A business that's creating obligations in others. That means they're selling. They're making debtors. They're not making creditors. A business that is making debtors is thriving. And an individual who's making debtors is thriving. And you can see the moment you meet him, you can see, is this an individual who's creating debtors or an individual who's creating creditors? Is he a draining human being who pulls and pulls and schleps every last ounce out of you with no intention of ever repaying? Or is he a sensitive human being? He's scared that maybe he's schlepping too much, maybe he won't be able to repay, always worried, always endeavoring to respond in whatever way he can. Two different types of human beings. And we saw this morning the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos in the second parak, where the Mishnah says, Tsuru'u ezihi derech ro'o. She's rachik mimena ha'adam. What's a bad system of living that one should keep away from? We're not talking here about an action, we're talking about a system of living. Rabbi Eliezer says an ayin ro'o, a mean attitude. Rabbi Yeshua omer chove ro'o, Rabbi Yeshua says a bad friend. Rabbi Yossi omer shochin ro'o, Rabbi Yossi says a bad neighbor. It's more important that you're the people living in close proximity to you are good. Rabbi Shimon omer, a person who borrows and doesn't pay up, that's a bad midah to keep far away from. Whether you're borrowing from men or you're borrowing from the Ribbono Shel Olam. One who's prepared to borrow without paying, that's a midah rov from which you should keep away. The previous Mishnah, Tzuru Ezer Viderech Toivo Shidbak Bohodom. Come and see which is a good way that one should cleave to, one should follow. So we've got the opposite. Rabbi Eliezer, who said ayin ro, who said a bad eye, says ayin tova, a good eye. Rabbi Yeshua, who said a bad friend, says chaver tov, a good friend. Rabbi Yossi, who says a bad neighbor, says a shochen tov, a good neighbor. Rabbi Shimon, who said one who borrows without paying, haroyes hanoyla, one who can foresee consequences. That's a good way to follow. What's the one got to do with the other? Is foreseeing consequences the opposite of borrowing without paying? Yes. the seeing consequences, the knowledge of every action is either the creation of a debt or the fulfillment of a debt. If you're accepting something from the world or from another person or from the Ribbono Shel Olam, you've got to foresee the consequence. The consequence is you owe it. That's the consequence. It goes into your books as a debit and not as a credit. You've got to know that and foresee that and make provision to repay it. And if you have no provision to repay it, don't take it. That's the midah. Somebody who can see the consequences of his actions and can understand what the creation of an indebtedness is and what it means, and he can avoid it wherever he's able to. And he makes sure that when he borrows, he's borrowing and has the capacity to repay. So that is the basis now of Yiddishkeit. And this covers every area of Yiddishkeit. The beauty of this concept is it covers halacha. It covers interpersonal halacha. It covers halacha between man and God. And it covers midas. It's the basis of all midas, of all human characteristics. When we're talking about a good person, a frum Jew, a Jew with Yiras Shamayim, this is what we mean. A Jew who understands the meaning of the creation and the fulfillment of obligations, who knows that every one of his actions or every receipt of somebody else's actions is either the creation or the fulfillment of an obligation. Now we can need to understand the principles that we've been concerned with. Before you lend money to somebody, what do you want to know? You want to know two things: integrity and financial standing. It doesn't help lending money to an honest poor man, because he won't be able to repay you. So you've got to know that you're lending it to him, but you don't expect to see it. Likewise, it doesn't help lending money to a rich rogue, because he will be able to pay you, but he won't pay you either. In the end, you'll lose as well, some way or another. What do you need in order to lend money? You want to know that you're dealing with a man of integrity, and you want to know that he has the capacity to repay you. You have security or you don't have security, but you want to know that he has behind him, he's sufficiently substantial to be able to stand good for the money you're lending him. If he isn't, then you're giving tzedakah, you're not lending money. When we talk about integrity, what kind of integrity are we talking about? Now you can find two kinds of integrity. You can find a man who doesn't tell a lie, but he doesn't pay his debts either. You can find a man who's about tzedakah, but he doesn't pay his debts. You can find a man who keeps Shabbos and Yom Tov, keeps kashrus, doesn't pay his debts. How do you explain it? We're talking about a specific kind of integrity. We're talking about a roye es hanoilot, one who understands the concept of obligations and commitments, and understands that every action is the creation of an obligation or the fulfillment of an obligation, and one who feels intensely uncomfortable about owing. That's the bottom line of integrity. A moral man is a man who feels intensely uncomfortable about owing, and he'll go out of his way to make sure that he doesn't owe. He'll sell what he can to pay, he'll do whatever he can to repay, and if he can't, at least he'll go to the baraboso, he'll go to the malbe, he'll go to the lender and he'll say, "Don't think I've forgotten about you. I'm trying my best, it's not going to be this week, I'll try and give you a little bit next week, please bear with me, I feel as uncomfortable as you do." That's all the malbe wants to hear. That's all the lender wants to hear. As long as he knows you've got the resources and you still feel uncomfortable. The moment the lender starts feeling that the borrower is no longer uncomfortable about the debt, that's the time to start getting worried. Because no matter what resources he's got, he's going to be lost on his list of payments. So provided there is within the human being, provided we are dealing with such a human being who in his nature is a Pinkas. He's a nature, he is a notebook. That's what he is. He's the type of person who shows the sensitivity to indebtedness. When you speak to him, you see on his face, it's the most amazing thing. Don't look around now, but when you go out, look around in the streets a little bit. Just look on people's faces. You will label them with the greatest of ease. You'll stand at a bus stop and look at people. And you'll just lay, give a taker. Body language, expression on the face, you see it, the way they speak, you see it immediately. The ones who take and the ones who feel uncomfortable taking, the ones who give and the ones who schlep, immediately you see it. And you've got to know that that's the essence of immorality. And no matter how polite they are, and how kind they are, and how sweet they are, and how honest they are, if he's a taker, beware. You're dealing with somebody inherently immoral, somebody who will destroy you. Not because he wants to destroy you. It's because he has no feeling of discomfort in taking without giving back. And beware of such an individual. So when you find a human being, let's say who has limitless capacity, he owns billions and billions, limitless capacity, and he's an individual who feels intensely uncomfortable about owing, always busy trying to repay more than he's borrowed, can't stand the feeling that he owes anybody anything, how much money would you lend him? Limitless. Give him a blank check. Makes no difference. You're safe, absolutely safe with such a human being. Now, is it possible that the Ribbono Shel Olam is willing to lend us limitlessly? Or do we have credit limits with the Ribbono Shel Olam? How much can we draw from the Ribbono Shel Olam? How much goodness can we take before the Ribbono Shel Olam starts getting uneasy? Depends on the individual. What do we need to examine? Our degree of feeling, of acknowledgement of indebtedness, number one. And number two, our capacity to repay. Do we have the currency? The degree of acknowledgement of indebtedness, that depends on us. Depends on what kind of people we are. If we are tzaddikim, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't have to worry about that. That goes back to the piece of Vilna Gaon that we learned at Shalosh Shudas this afternoon. The man who is crooked in his dealings, who takes more than he deserves, will end up being poor. Because he has no credit worthiness. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not willing to lend him any money. But tzaddik, who takes only what is due to him, and works much harder in order to earn his living honestly, the Ribbono Shel Olam will give to him as much as he wants, as much as he needs. Do we have the capacity to repay? Let's analyze that medrash. That gave us the example of the blind man and the man with the light, because there lies in the basis of the whole yesod. The blind man asked the man who could see exactly the same question. What do you need me for? How can I repay you? You led me through the streets. Without you I would have stumbled, I would have fallen, I would have gotten run over. I couldn't have moved without you. I owe you my life. What are you asking me now to turn the light on for you? Can't you turn the light on yourself? Answers the man who can see. I'm doing it to allow you to pay your debt. Earlier in the Medrash, Amalehu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Bnei Yisrael, Lo she'ani tzorich lochem, I don't need you. Elo she'ta'iru li kederech she'ra'arti lochem, but light for me the way I lit for you. Note carefully, the Medrash does not say that God said, I don't need the light. He said, I don't need you. Let's understand that. The man who can see leads the blind man around the street. Good. They come inside the dark house. He says to the blind man, turn on the light. The blind man says, what do you need me to turn on the light? The man who can see says, that's not the point. I want to give you the opportunity of repaying me for what I did. The question still remains. Without the man who could see, the blind man couldn't move. So he won't turn on the light. The man who can see will turn it on himself. What kind of repayment is this? It's not fair. There's no correlation whatever between the expression of gratitude and the deed. The answer is no. I need the light desperately, says the man who can see. When I come into this house, I'm as blind as you were out there. With all my eyesight, I can see nothing. I need the light desperately. It's true, I could turn the light on myself. I'm giving you the opportunity to provide me with something I need desperately. And here we see the method of HaKoros HaTzeriach. You know, you often stand in a gift shop, and you're here inevitably. It's a treat if you stand in a gift shop, but you've got to choose the right gift shop. It's got to be the kind of gift shop when you walk past its windows, you say to yourself, how do these people make a living? Who buys these funny things here? Well, do you need such things? So when you find such a shop, you find them in every shopping center, walk inside and just browse around, tell the shopkeeper so that they shouldn't be denied of doubt, I haven't come to buy, I've just come to look for your mind. And the shopkeeper, I'm sure, will say, no, go ahead, and just listen. And inevitably you'll find somebody coming in and saying, you know, I've got a problem, I need to buy a present for a friend, but it's one of these people, you know, who've got everything. What do I buy them? What do I give them? Oh, she says, I've got just the thing for you. And she'll show them some kind of a cuckoo clock that you can hang upside down from the skybook. Sure, he hasn't got one of these things. Look, it just can be suspended in midair. My goodness, is the person. No, they haven't got one of those. Thank you very much. I'll take it. Up they go. Sugar. And what does he need the cuckoo clock that can be suspended in midair for? What is it? It's a lack of understanding of that close I told you. It doesn't matter if he's got everything. But Ribbono Shel Olam's also got everything. That doesn't mean we can't shout Kol HaTov. That's a lazy man's way out. It's a lazy way out of Kol HaTov. He doesn't need me. What can I give him that he hasn't already got? So, I'm positive for Kol HaTov. Thank you very much. I can eat everything he's got. I can take everything he's got. And I don't need to repay him at all. He's got it all. It satisfies the conscience of the immoral man. I now can eat without feeling in any way indebted towards him. That's not the truth. You bring him his Shabbos Chalos. He needs Shabbos Chalos desperately. He can't have his Shabbos without Shabbos Chalos. You provide it for him. I could have managed without you too. So what? The man who could see can manage without the blind man too. He can also turn on a light. That's not the point. The point is what I need desperately. The fact is you provide it for me. That's enough of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bring him a bottle of wine for Kiddush. That's all. He's got everything in the world. It doesn't matter. You've given him something which he couldn't manage without. It's true he could manage without you. That's not important. But not without what you did for him. That he couldn't manage without. Somebody else would have had to do it. And if somebody else would have had to do it, it would have been the creation of a new obligation. And that has been saved him. You've saved him having to create a new obligation. And you've allowed yourself the opportunity to fulfill an obligation. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we now understand that principle, let's finally come back to our Avodas Hashem, to the service of God. How can we possibly repay the Ribbono Shel Olam for the goodness we've received from him? Does he need us? Says the Medrash, no. Lo shani tzorich lachem. I don't need you. But I do need the light. There has to be light in the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash doesn't work without light. True, I could make the light myself, but I'm allowing you to make the light. So you make the light. Aaron HaKohen makes the light. What kind of HaKadosh HaTov is that? Immense HaKadosh HaTov. The light without which the Beis HaMikdash cannot operate, you provide it. The fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam could provide it himself is irrelevant. What's important is that something of infinite value has been provided by you. The mitzvahs the Ribbono Shel Olam needs. The world can't operate without mitzvahs. True, the Ribbono Shel Olam could do the mitzvahs himself. Doesn't need us to do them. But he needs the mitzvahs. He gives us the opportunity to do them. So that we should be able to do for him something which is infinitely important and has extreme and infinite value. We don't have the value. He could do it without us, but he couldn't, so to say, or the Olam, the world, couldn't exist without the mitzvahs. And who contributed those mitzvahs to the world? We did. And he gave us the opportunity to do so. Now we have a beautiful concept. The Ribbono Shel Olam has given us a currency. Not rands, that aren't worth anything. Not even dollars that are worth something. He's given us mitzvahs which have no limit to their value and to their worth. And he said, look, the world needs mitzvahs. You do it. You do the mitzvahs. I won't do it. You do it. That way you can repay me for the goodness I've done you. And mitzvah is worth all the goodness. That is. You thought you can't repay for a day's life. I'll tell you with a mitzvah you can. A mitzvah is so big and so important that with that you can repay. I don't need you to do the mitzvah. If you don't do the mitzvah, there are plenty others, including myself, who can do the mitzvah. But here, take the opportunity to use the mitzvah to repay me so that you don't remain indebted to me, a debt which one day you're going to have to pay, come what may you have to pay. Rather pay it with the mitzvah. That being the case, if you now take a human being who has the Torah, so he has limitless resources, he has mitzvahs. Mitzvahs is a limitless currency. It enables you to pay with life, for life itself you can buy with mitzvahs. There's nothing you can't buy with a mitzvah. And you're also dealing with a tzaddik, with an individual who doesn't want to owe a penny. How much credit is the Ribbono Shel Olam going to lend to such an individual? As much as he wants. In the full knowledge that the Ribbono Shel Olam is not tying a noose around his neck by lending him more than he can cater for. He's got mitzvahs that he can do. And he likes to do mitzvahs. He doesn't like to remain indebted. So what does it bother the Ribbono Shel Olam to give him whatever he wants? And here you come to the individual who's able to manipulate nature. Even to change nature if he wants to, pleasure. He's got the currency to pay for it. He can back his currency. He's got the gold and he's got the integrity. He's got the morality. He's got the truthfulness. He's got the desire to repay and he's got the ability to repay. Whatever he wants, says the Ribbono de Shlom, he can take and he can have. That's the case when Bnei Yisrael come to the Ribbono de Shlom. All of Bnei Yisrael. And they say, this HaKoros HaTuv, we feel so indebted to Moshe Rabbeinu that we're prepared to give our lives, not to let him die. That's the indebtedness to Moshe Rabbeinu. In theory, the Ribbono de Shlom can't stand before that. That means they're demanding a loan from the Ribbono de Shlom. The loan is an extended life for Moshe Rabbeinu. How are you going to pay for it? Say, I'm Yisrael. The reason we wanted is for our, because of our feeling of indebtedness to Moshe. Do you think we're not going to repay our debts to you? And the currency we have the mitzvahs. So what does it bother you to lend us? Lend us more life. Lend us more time for Moshe Rabbeinu. And the only way that Ribbono Shlom can respond is be'etzem hayoyim hazeh. He has to use the same might, the same miracles that he used to get Noach into the ark and to get Moshe had to take the Israel out of Mitzrayim, the same miracles he had to use to take the life away from Moshe, to take Moshe away from Klal Yisrael. The sense of indebtedness, the currency with which to pay the debts, therein lies the greatness of the human being. With that, with the power to repay, through the mitzvahs that we're able to do, and the morality to want to repay, there is absolutely nothing which stands beyond the ability of the human being. Any human being who wants anything in the world, provided he has the stature and the morality and the integrity and is prepared to put in the effort and to be most nefesh for it, he can get it. If a man wants something strongly enough and powerfully enough, will lead him in the way that he wants.